Well, I mean, just cut it down a little bit. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. And welcome to all you little scrungy, skittering under the rocks right-wingers. I understand through sources that a bunch of you have decided to listen to the program. That's good. Listen to the program and then send me an email and tell me how sorry you are that you've been such sons of bitches and clowns and freaks and fools for the past 8-10 years, okay? Bruce in California sent me an email last night, and he was talking about something I spoke about on Tuesday. Bruce writes the following, Mike, you touched on a pet peeve. Waterboarding is not simulated drowning, which is how I referred to it. Bruce writes, it's real drowning, which is controlled. Please call it controlled drowning instead. Thanks, Bruce in California. Bruce is absolutely right. You know, usually when I'm ripping through a topic, especially if I have reference material in front of me, if the reference material says simulated drowning, you know, I'll say that. Bruce is absolutely right. It's not simulated anything. You are being drowned. And the drowning is controlled by your torturer. So, and remember, waterboarding, drowning, simulator, actual controlled drowning that George Bush and Dick Cheney authorized was grounds for execution after World War II. We executed members of the Japanese High Command. Is it time to execute Bush and Cheney? I mean, is it? I don't know. Is it? We did it to our adversaries after World War II. The precedent was established. And then, of course, Geneva Conventions were written. So should Bush and Cheney be beheaded? Of course, it wouldn't matter in Cheney's case. That son of a bitch has been among the walking dead for about 20 years now. But I who knows? Maybe I should get some puppets out and make the puppets talk. Today is the birthday of Martin Luther, the German theologian who pounded all that stuff on the door of the church in, where was it, Worms? And in addition to being the anniversary of his birthday, he was born in 1483, it's also the anniversary of the public release of Windows operating system in 1983. 1483, 1983, 500 years difference, exactly. Just coincidence? Martin Luther said, quote, faith must trample underfoot all reason, all sense, all understanding, end quote. Nice guy, huh? Irish Dave sent that to me. Thanks, Irish Dave. 1483, November 10th. 1483, Martin Luther was born. 500 years later, Windows operating system is born. Ooh. Oh, well, there's your proof. Sounds like Glenn Beck's program, doesn't it? But speaking of that, about faith must trample all underfoot, all reason, sense, and understanding. Faith, meaning religious faith, because Martin Luther was not a philosopher or a Buddhist or into meditation or massage therapy. He was a hardcore Lutheran, wasn't he? You know, Martin Luther, Lutheran. Wait a minute. Lutherans? Martin Luther? Well, there it is. In regards to that, a guy named, you ever heard of this guy you're going to, John Shimkus? He is a Republican representative from Illinois. And he is, he's been there for a while, and he got reelected. And he is hoping to chair when Congress reconvenes, or the new session starts, I should say, in January. He's hoping to chair the powerful House Energy Committee. And in anticipation of that, he quoted the Bible and referenced God on the issue of global warming. He insists that we shouldn't be concerned about the planet being destroyed because God promised Noah it wouldn't happen again after the Great Flood. That's right. Speaking before House Energy Subcommittee on Energy and Environment, a hearing some months ago, Shimkus quoted chapter 8, verse 22 of the book of Genesis. He said, quote, as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. End quote. Genesis. Shimkus continued, quote, I believe that is the infallible word of God, and that's the way it is going to be for his creation. The earth will end only when God declares his time to be over. Man will not destroy this earth. This earth will not be destroyed by a flood. Oh, my God. Ah! He added, today, we have about 388 parts per million in the atmosphere. I guess he's referring to carbon. I think, dioxide. I think in the age of dinosaurs, when we had the most flora and fauna, we were probably at 4,000 parts per million. There is a theological debate that this is a carbon-starved planet, not too much carbon. And the cost of a cap and trade on the poor is now being discovered. Ah, cap and trade. And what he's referring there is Obama's American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, so-called cap and trade bill aimed at limiting carbon emissions. Well, there you go. Shimkus has it. Oh, by the way, the bill passed the House of Representatives last year, still yet to pass the Senate. And every time you ask a teabagger, what do you really hate, other than the fact that he's a black man, what do you hate, and a Democrat, what do you hate most about the Obama administration? Well, because he's trying to push cap and trade on us. What's cap and trade? It's that thing about, making poor people pay more for their gasoline. What? Jesus, God. A NASA thermal satellite image showing the world's Arctic surface temperature trends during autumn between 1981 and 2008 indicates that temperatures have increased over the Arctic due to dramatic recent decline in sea ice cover. See, when the planet warms up and the ice melts, it's kind of a circular effect, a closed system. The sea is no longer covered with white ice that reflects light and heat back. It's now dark and it absorbs heat. Right? Which causes the global warming to increase. But not to worry, because God told Noah, he did. God told Noah, I will not destroy the earth by water, so there's not going to be any flooding. What did he say? I'm going to burn your asses up? What? It's not the first time that Shimkus has opened his mouth and stuck his ass in. In May of 2007, he compared the Iraq War to a baseball game between his beloved St. Louis Cardinals and the much-despised Chicago Cubs. He also hit the headlines in 2009 when he walked out as President Obama delivered a speech to a joint session of the House and the Senate. Oh, by the way, the Committee on Energy and Committee, the Committee on Energy and Commerce, to give its full title, is one of the oldest standing committees of the United States House of Representatives. It was established in 1795. And it takes a central role in formulating U.S. policy on climate change and global warming. Well, if Mr. Shimkus, if old John Shimkus, and I think he's a Lutheran too, if old John Shimkus takes over of the House Energy Committee, his co-pilot in the co-chair seat will be God. And God promised Noah that he, God, will not...
Noah, oh Noah, lots of rain is on its way, gonna rain. a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
I don't have much to offer him. I'm very smart, you see.
21 past the hour. I guess you know by now that President Obama's commission on fiscal responsibilities and so on and so forth, it was a commission. This is the funny part. It was suggested by the Republicans that there be a commission, a bipartisan put together, to study all the money that the government takes in, all the money that it pays out, and find out a way to defeat this horrendous debt. The only way we can defeat it is to go back to 1980 and start there. But, you know, what the hell? Let's play the game and pretend like we're really serious about reducing this massive debt. So they hired this crazy old bastard, Alan Simpson, and Erskine Bowles, who I don't know. This guy looks like he was surprised in the bottom of a box of Cracker Jack from 1953. Erskine Bowles, are you kidding me? They put these two guys, he's a Democrat. They put these two guys together. And the initial report, the recommendations from those two guys, not the full commission. I think there are about 18 people on this commission. But the recommendations from those two were released today. Son of a bitch. This is the instrument that will probably lead to revolution, the second one, in this country. I am not kidding you. What they're talking about doing, among other things, I don't know how to start. I just don't know how to start. Let me quote from, what's his name? Grijalva, who is the, Raul Grijalva, Democrat of Arizona, who is the, co-chair of, the Congressional Progressive, Caucus. First of all, the commission's report will only favor the wealthy. Grijalva said the path this plan would set is not good for the public. Congress should be having a realistic, productive conversation right now about how to reduce our budget deficit and maintain a secure retirement system for those who have earned it. Instead, we're debating a proposal from a commission dedicated to cutting Social Security programs or social programs, reducing corporate and upper income taxes at the same time. This is not a recipe for a healthier American economy, end quote. No, it's not. I'll tell you what it is. It's a recipe for open rebellion in this country. I don't think the American public is going to stand for this. They're talking about cutting everything except taxes for the wealthy. Well, they're going to cut that, too, but in the wrong, you know, they're going to bring it down even lower than it already is. I mean, son of a bitch, it's like there is a virus in this country that has found a home inside the brains of right-wingers and teabaggers, and you scum on the right, you filthy scum on the right, all you Republicans, all you brain-dead drones that follow these people, this virus has infected these people, eaten their goddamn brains, and what is left is a nation full of zombies. There are millions of zombies in this country who are listening to this garbage from Glenn Beck, this murderous bastard who advocates for people to go kill other people. Beck uses his program to advocate that his nutcase listeners go out and start shooting. So does Limbaugh. So do all of them. Oh, they use their little couch language, but you know and I know. All right. These guys who keep pushing this. A bulk of the American public, millions of people, are nothing but brain-dead zombies. So now comes this. We're going to cut everything. National parks, education, energy plan, everything is going to be cut. Everything. Social Security benefits, Medicare, Medicaid. If your child gets sick and you can't afford insurance, the little bastard's going to die. That's what they refer to your living child, a little bastard. Now, if your child were a clump of cells, these sick, careful, these sick freaks would bend over backwards. Or if they were like, who was the guy from Pennsylvania brought the dead fetus home? Rick Santorum. They love to play with dead things. They love to play with dead, little mummified dead things, little dead human fetuses. But if it's a live kid, they're about to cut your kid's throat. Every kid in America. We already have one of the highest poverty levels, if not the highest, of any industrialized nation on earth. And these filthy bastards have come up with an idea to make it even worse. I'll tell you something. If this goes through, now the plan is not this is just the co-chair report. This is not the full commission. But these proposals only favor the wealthy. But they, but directly, bluntly, right up front, screw the workers, screw the American people, screw the middle class, screw the children, screw the old people. Here we come. Fascism. Well, it's about time, isn't it, for normal Americans to say, okay, you teabag right-wing Republican freaks have had enough fun. Now sit down and shut up, or we're going to sit you down and shut you up. You think?
Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Oh, what? What do you think it's going to take to make the American people decide that Republicans and teabaggers and corporatists and capitalists need to be subdued? Because to allow them to continue the games that they're playing, the capitalists and the and their puppets, the teabaggers, the Republicans, these right wing dumbasses, to allow this to continue is to guarantee Noah the damned is to guarantee the end of the earth. Oh, and by the way, quick email here from Bob Kincaid. He said the thing these pitiful little wingnuts don't understand about their God is that he, she, or it is the original master of the loophole. I guess it was lost on Representative Shimkus that God said he wouldn't destroy the earth again. He didn't, however, say he wouldn't destroy the people on it. Bob. Master of the loophole. Oh, my God. So it is time right now for Prairie 2. Subject line is a good investment if you can keep from eating them. Is he talking about Republicans? Oh, my God. You know, I've heard Republican ass meat tastes a little bit like, you know, thigh meat tastes a little bit like pork. Is that true? You could take one of these average corpulent Republicans and just, you know, just make ham? Could you do that? I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask someone. People who have done cannibalism in various parts of the world refer to it as long pig. In a certain part of the world, eating other humans. Long pig. From Prairie 2, the first broadside came from Obama's Deficit Commission. It came tearing through the aging bulwarks of the American dream. The expected cuts to Social Security and Medicare were there, along with a number of other cuts to add window dressing, like cuts to the defense budget. Woo! But the big guns are the cap on federal revenue at 21% of gross domestic product, and slashing the top marginal tax rate to 23%. Remember when St. Reagan took over, it was at 70%, right? Okay, 23%. Capping revenue is, of course, intended to be a self-reinforcing death spiral, as gross domestic product will continue to shrink with the continuation of the insane right-wing policies that already have us by the throat. The reason we have the deficits we have now is that GDP has not grown adequately in many years since we no longer produce anything. Indeed, a big chunk of the GDP comes from Wall Street shuffling tons of paper so they can skim off the top instead of producing anything of value. They don't create wealth. They merely steal it from those who do. Of course, the $4 trillion or so that Bush gave away to his rich cronies had something to do with this mess, too. In fact, for the top income bracket, who now average 16% in income tax, this group would find the 23% top rate proposed by the Deficit Commission as an increase in taxes if they ever would actually pay that. But thanks to Bush's slashing of the tax on capital gains to 15% and loopholes that allow any rich guy to take his salary as capital gains without producing any real increase in capital, the Republicans, including the teabaggers, want to cut capital gains tax to zero. Of course, the masters of the universe at the Wall Street banks have announced that for practical purposes, they will simply ignore the new regulations prohibiting proprietary trading. That's where you use the high-speed computer systems and rip everybody else off. This is the only division in these, I think, this is the only division in these banks that makes money, quote, quote, so there's no way they're giving that up. Their lending operations are hemorrhaging hundreds of billions from all the bad loans they created to provide a basis for securitized debt and derivatives trading. They would all fold if they had to stand on that alone. They are really zombies, long dead but still staggering about and producing $144 billion in bonuses for their masters. That would be masters of the universe to you, booby. The Federal Reserve has already ratcheted up its money printing operation, originally slated to be $90 billion a month, is now going to be $110 billion a month for the first 2 months of 2011. Build is reducing credit costs for consumers and businesses to stimulate the economy. Mortgage rates are already at an all-time low, but try getting a loan as home prices continue to fall and credit card companies are not likely to cut interest rates because they are monopolies and they don't need to. Corporate bonds are already at less than 1%. And they are just sitting on the $1.7 trillion they now have. Lending them more at an even lower rate is going to make them invest. They're operating at 80% capacity and have no incentive to expand as long as they can buy cheap from China. Gold fell back yesterday, but it's back up over $1,400 today as the U.S. dollar is alternately seen a safe haven compared to euros and as a sucker bet with the Fed printing money. GDP is about $1.2 trillion a month, and the Fed will print $0.11 trillion a month, so inflation of the money supply is not going to happen quickly. However, the only place for the money to go is into commodities, so expect your canned goods to appreciate dramatically. That is, if you can just keep from eating them. Sometimes I get, I don't know about you, but I do get a bit lost sometimes in Prairie 2's discourse because I am too stupid to understand. I'm like your typical American. We're not stupid, but ignorant. We don't get this. The very guts and core of what has kept this capitalist Ponzi scheme going for 230 years, the average American doesn't understand. I'm like me. I'm an average American. I don't understand it. Do you? So thank God we have a financial affairs correspondent, Prairie 2, who can make it even harder to understand. It's just every time I read his stuff, I think I shouldn't be sitting here running or reading. I should be out running someplace. You want to know why I consider all Republicans to be dumbasses, especially the ones that hold office? Here's just an example. This is in, at the blog at the New York Times today. Note to the incoming Republican majority in the House. Eliminating government programs that do not exist does not save money. Of the few specific cuts that congressional Republicans have proposed in their promised assault on annual budget deficits, you know, they never say what they're going to cut. One of the biggest that they have owned up to would save $25 billion over 10 years, the Republicans claim, by ending an emergency welfare fund. You see where they always go to first? Emergency welfare. Well, we're going to end that! The Republican Study Committee, which includes more than 100 of the most conservative House Republicans, promoted the idea in a statement this week saying, quote, with the national debt quickly approaching $14 trillion, Washington needs to get serious about cutting spending, end quote. So they want to go after the emergency welfare fund. The only problem, that fund expired September 30th. It doesn't even exist anymore. It originally was $5 billion as part of Obama's roughly $800 billion. What does that work out to? Huh? What's 1/8 of 5%? 0.40? At $5 billion, it was part of Obama's roughly $800 billion two-year stimulus plan and was created to help states meet the increased demand for welfare assistance and employment programs caused by the Bush recession. House Democrats, with support from state and local officials, voted to extend the fund this year given continued high unemployment, but the Senate said no. So, House Republicans have calculated the fund's annual cost, $2.5 billion. They multiply it by 10 years, which is the common period for projecting budget costs and savings. The product? Savings of $25 billion! The actual math is a lot simpler. It's not 10 times $2.5 billion, it's 10 times zero. And as my first grade daughter, Molly, will tell you, 10 times zero is zero, you dumbasses! On Wednesday, Representative Jim McDermott, a Democrat from Washington State who sponsored the fund proposal, originally issued his own statement, quote, what's next? Claiming savings for cutting New Deal work programs that were terminated over 70 years ago? Of course, you Republicans, you are dumber than a sack of boiled owl crap. Do you know that? Every one of you, every single one of you right-wingers, you're insanely stupid. And your leadership, you deserve it. You absolutely deserve Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and the zombie Dick Cheney. You deserve them. But we normal people are going to have to do something about you folks. I think we'll put together the Malloy Commission on how to eliminate the poison caused by right-wingers, teabaggers, Republicans, and you jerkwads out there who couldn't find your butt with both hands.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Remember the Supreme Court ruling on December 12th, I think it was December 12th, 2000, that said George W. Bush would be grievously injured if the vote counting were to continue in the state of Florida. And they based this on the idea that the different counties in Florida had different ways of counting votes. This county said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This county said 5, 10, 15. This county used punch cards. This county didn't use punch. So the Supreme Court in this brilliant ruling on the part of the capitalist thugs who took over the country on that date, The Supreme Court said, well, this is not, this is a violation of what? Equal protection or something, because they count votes differently. And the Supreme Court, when the counties did, and when the Supreme Court ruled this and overturned a ruling by the Florida Supreme Court, the Florida Supreme Court said, hog crap, keep counting the votes. The U.S. Supreme Court, five conservative members said, no, stop the vote counting. Okay. So the vote counting stopped, and we had 8-year reign of terror of Bush and his puppet master Cheney. The Supreme Court in that ruling tried to say that the ruling that they were issuing was not to be used as precedent. First time in the history of the Supreme Court that the Supreme Court says, well, we're going to rule this way, but you can't ever use this ruling as a precedent for some other ruling. This is only to ensure the ascension of the Bush-Cheney crime spree. So this ruling can only be used this time. Well, apparently Joe Miller, the Republican teabag freak bastard up in Alaska, didn't get the memo on that. He has filed suit in federal court against the Alaska Division of Elections. And his suit basically says that in counting the write-in votes for Lisa Murkowski, the real Republican up there, that the vote counting, it should be thrown out, because the suit challenges the rules on a number of grounds. The main argument is that only a correctly spelled ballot, as opposed to a looser standard of voter intent, only a correctly spelled ballot, Murkowski, should be used to judge whether or not a ballot should be accepted. And Miller's campaign also makes the claim that misspelled Murkowski ballots should in fact be interpreted not as votes for Murkowski, but as protest votes against her. Oh, Jesus Christ. You see what the teabaggers have in store? Do you understand? The Shimkus freak, cap and trade is bad because Noah was told by God, and this Joe Miller insane Nazi is saying, well, if Lisa Murkowski's name is spelled wrong, they weren't really voting for her. They were voting against her. Josh Mark Marshall at Talking Points Memo quotes from the lawsuit filed by the Nazi. Here's what it says. The new policy makes no provisions for the many voters who cast protest votes. Prior to the election, people commented on radio stations and in the comment sections in blogs and newspaper stories that they would deliberately incorrectly write in a variation of Murkowski as a protest. They did so knowing that Murkowski was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on a spelling bee campaign, replete with wristbands, pencils, and tattoos, all to educate the voters on proper spelling. Why was this done? Because even Murkowski had read the law and knew that it required proper spelling. So protest voters were trying to send a message to the candidate. The state has failed to create any guideline or standard that would account for the intent of the voter who intentionally cast a protest vote. That's from the Nazis' lawsuit. Joshua Marshall finds this argument pretty laughable, and at least from a legal standpoint, it would seem unlikely to hold water. Elections law expert Rick Hasen thinks that Miller's camp does have a few good arguments it could make, the most promising being a due process claim that argues the candidate's rights were violated by a change in election rules in the middle of the election. Oh, but here's the thing, Mr. Joe Miller Nazi. You right-wing fascist, you. Here's the deal. You didn't get enough votes. And you're trying to do what George Bush did. You're trying to model yourself on the little toy fascist when most of America knows at this point, Joe, that you're the real deal. You're the real deal. You praise the methods of the East German secret police. You are the real deal, Joe. So why don't you come up with something original? Why are you borrowing from poor old dope, drug, alcohol-addled George W. Bush. What a bunch of freaks. These people, this is what our political system has degenerated to, thanks to the Supreme Court ruling on September 12th or September 8th, whenever. I think it was the 12th, 2000. Here we are, where you have a self-described Nazi declaring that people who misspelled Murkowski's name in the write-in section were registering a protest vote. If they wanted to protest, Joe, why didn't they just vote for you? Oh, that would be too simple, wouldn't it? And plus the fact that Joe Miller thinks that the average voter in Alaska is dumber than whale blubber. Right, Joe? Right? Good God, what has happened? Stick around. We have more fun and frivolity right after the break. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Justine in Maryland writes in, Mike, you probably have seen the story in today's Washington Post that the Obama, quote, justice, end quote, department is not going to file any charges against those who willfully and in direct defiance of a court order destroyed 92 videotapes showing the CIA and their operatives torturing people the Bush-Cheney team labeled suspected terrorists. Yes, I'm familiar with that story. I mean, Obama, I can't believe that Barack Obama is making these decisions without some kind of a threat hanging over his head. Anyway, Justine goes on, take a further look at the language used by the Post reporters, Peter Finn and Jerry Markham. They, and thus the Washington Post, ignore decades, if not centuries, of U.S. law and continue to use the false description of waterboarding as harsh interrogation, and also falsely claim that it's only human rights groups in the Obama administration that consider waterboarding torture. Ha, how can they include Obama in that statement? It is our law. Well, on paper anyway, which sadly means nothing. What's past the rabbit hole, Mike? Because we're already there. Justine in Maryland. Yeah, I've got that story on the stack here someplace that the Obama Justice Department has said to the lawbreakers, the people who directly violated a court order during the investigation into the torture, the rendition, that any evidence was not to be destroyed. And the CIA said, oh, screw you, and destroyed it anyway. Where is the damn thing? I've got it here someplace. It bears a look at. I guess I'm not going to have to do it for tonight, but here it is. This is from the New York Times. A federal prosecutor will not bring criminal charges against any of the CIA officers involved in destroying videotapes depicting the brutal interrogation, that means the torture, of detainees, the Justice Department said yesterday. After an investigation spanning nearly 3 years, John Durham, the special prosecutor assigned to the case by former Attorney General Michael Mukasey. You know, Durham has decided not to charge the CIA undercover officers and top lawyers at the agency for their roles in the destruction of the tapes. A Justice Department spokesman said that since that appointment, quote, a team of prosecutors and FBI agents led by Mr. Durham has conducted an exhaustive investigation into the matter. As a result of that investigation, Mr. Durham has concluded that he will not pursue criminal charges for the destruction of the videotapes. The destruction of the interrogation tapes was first reported by the New York Times in December 2007. The announcement that there would be no charges in the destruction of the tapes leaves unanswered whether Mr. Durham will bring other charges related to the death or mistreatment of detainees in the hands of the CIA, or to any false statements made by officials to investigators about torture. The Anti-Torture Act has an 8-year statute of limitations, and there is no time limit for murder charges. Anthony Romero, the executive director of the ACLU, condemned Durham's failure to file charges. He noted that at the time, Romero noted that at the time the tapes were destroyed, they were pertinent to several pending legal cases, including a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit filed by the ACLU in 2004. Romero said, quote, it strains credulity that the conscious destruction of tapes depicting torture would not be a crime. How the destruction of evidence in the middle of many pieces of litigation directly on point to what was captured on the videos is not seen as obstruction of justice is hard to imagine. The destruction of the tapes and Durham's conclusion raise serious doubts about whether the government has the political will to police itself, end quote. Well, no, of course not. Of course not. So, yeah, this was in the list of things that I wanted to get to. I'm glad that Justine brought it up. The Obama administration, you know, the socialist Kenyan that these half-assed teabaggers are always wetting their britches about. In not pursuing these charges, I don't know how to word this. Being signatories to these international agreements means that the government of the United States, no matter who that government is, has a legal obligation to pursue charges against people who do the things that Dick Cheney and George Bush personally authorized. And to not pursue charges of destruction of evidence, violation of court orders, obstruction of justice. To not pursue charges means that the Obama administration is as much of an outlaw organization as the Bush crime family. What other conclusion can you come to? Somebody help me out. Tell me. Send me an email. Tell me that the Obama administration is innocent where it concerns being as corrupt around this issue as the Bush crime family. So somebody make the argument, make the case. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see that argument, you know? Good God. At thedailypress.com, something that is just breaking. I got it from Reg. From a aeronautical engineer at Northrop Grumman for more than 40 years. He and hundreds of others in their Long Island, New York center have been laid off. The news came via a phone call from his boss, I guess this evening. Layoffs by the hundreds also will come at their Newport News, Virginia shipyard. Defense budget cuts were blamed. Budget cuts? Where? What the hell? Fun time ahead, Reg writes. So that should make the news here at some point, maybe tonight or tomorrow. Hundreds of employees laid off. Well, I don't know nothing. We got a break here. Okay. And I think I'm going to go ahead and have Kathy open up the phones in case you want to make a comment this hour. 877-996-2556. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, it's not time yet? What do we got? Another 15 seconds? I thought I heard music. Maybe I do. It's the music of these squealing pig teabaggers and right-wingers and Republicans. They all squeal. Don't they? Don't they squeal? Wait till you hear them squeal when their dole is cut off, huh? I said dole.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more Mike Malloy.
Where's the music? Oh, well, 21 past the hour. What'd you have, some fruitcake on the phone? Some halfwit?
I had someone wanted to take you to task because you said Martin Luther was a Lutheran and he was a Catholic. That was his argument. That, and why did you call him a teabagger? Because he's just a Tea Party member and you're making nasty comments.
Oh, my God.
They never have anything substantive to say.
Listen, I've asked a million times, you half-witted right-wingers, please, don't call. I mean, you turn my stomach, you turn the listener's stomachs. You're a bunch of idiots. You know, call Glenn Beck. Sit around and do drugs with Limbaugh. Go get naked with Michael Wiener Savage. You know, just stay. Do me a favor. You can listen to this program. It might even enlighten you a little bit, you half-wits. But don't call. You have nothing to say. I don't like you anyway. I really don't. You know, you're just. Never mind. Kevin is in Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. Oh, you know, going to what you just said, I listened to Sirius this morning, and a few conservatives are calling in, I think, on some of these morning shows on Sirius this morning, and Liz Winstead had it with a couple of right-wingers this morning. They were just being totally, totally disrespectful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I hear you. But, hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, because I had this going through my head sometimes, and I could be incorrect, but, I mean, it seems like there are some stylistic differences between the two parties, but it comes to, like, foreign policy issues and certain other issues, you know. it seems like the parties are very similar.
Well, they are, both of them, one to a greater degree than the other, but both of them are wholly owned subsidiaries, not quite wholly owned on the Democrat side, but close enough to it, of corporate America, the murderous security state that this country has become. They own both parties. There are a few standouts still in the Democratic Party. I hope that they are able to remain in office and that around them can coalesce a movement that is really progressive, since so many of these filthy blue dog Democrats were defeated in this bloodbath that occurred last Tuesday. But you're right. You know, as much as I did not like him, George Wallace put it rather succinctly back in 72, when he said that there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Was it 72 or 76? I don't remember. Anyway, it was back then. And Wallace made the point. Now, he had his own agenda. He was, he would be the modern day equivalent of these Tea Party, morons. But what he had to say was pretty much the truth. And that was, you know, almost 40 years ago.
Well, you know, there's, you know, in academic circles, of course, they talk about the national security ideology. You know, they actually call it the national security ideology, national security state ideology, I should
right.
say. You know, so, you know, there's truth to that, you know. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, I think that's what we're looking at, especially with the corporate coup d'etat, perhaps, in this country.
Yeah, and it's going to take, I'm not exactly sure at this point what it's going to take to eliminate from the political discussion the people who are ruining the country. And that means just about every Republican, certainly every teabag moron, and probably half of the Democratic Party. Now, what that elimination will consist of is, I don't know. It's up for debate. I don't know. But
hey, Mike, I told you this a couple of years ago when I talked to you that you're much funnier than Bill Maher and John Stewart put together, and I still hold that today. And to me, you're a gold standard of all people on talk radio on the left, in my opinion.
Well, that's nice of you to say. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. You take care. One party corporate state is pretty much where we are, with a few exceptions within the Democratic Party, but every single Republican office holder has become lower than a street whore. No offense to sex workers, but every Republican office holder, every single one of them, because they continue to operate as a Republican in what has become this national security state that is not interested in anything other than the total conversion to fascism in the United States. And it uses the fear of it used to be the Russians or the Reds or the commies. It's the fear of the Muslims now, the fear of the infiltrators inside our country. This is like the John Birch Society when Senator Joe McCarthy, when he insisted that communists had infiltrated the State Department, that Eisenhower was a communist. Jesus, God, here we are again, right? History repeats itself first as tragedy and then as farce. Where are we this time, right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow, destabilize the Middle East, enrich the CEO, lie down, people, lay down your Bill of Rights, tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go. Reflectors of our bikes, said you kids.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. I got an email today from Kay Petrini, who is our education affairs correspondent. And she writes, I've probably written to you about this before, but last night's show jogged my memory about it. Each year in world history... she's a school teacher, as you probably know. I show parts of the film Europa, Europa. The story is based on the real-life experience of Solomon Perel, a young Jewish boy who, through a cruel twist of fate, ends up in the Hitler Youth. In one of the last scenes, Solly, that's the kid, refuses to fire his weapon at the approaching Soviet army. His commander yells at him, "What in the hell are you doing? Shoot, for God's sake. Do you want to be captured by the Soviets? The Russians execute their prisoners on the spot. We must hold out so we can be captured by the Americans." End quote. Back then, you see, we were seen as the good guys. We had the reputation of treating prisoners humanely, without the use of torture. The Nazis in Solly's unit had respect for the Americans, who were their enemy. On last night's show, you asked a rhetorical question of what makes the torture authorized and carried out by the United States any different from the torture carried out by the other by other nations. I would say that the difference is in the eye of the beholder. Most other civilized nations see Bush's actions for what they are, war crimes. In contrast, most Americans have their eyes squeezed shut, and if they ever do open them, the only stuff that gets through is the nationalistic bull blank spewed by the corporate media. How far have we fallen since those heady days of the post-World War II era, when the United States was regarded, justly or unjustly, as the good guys? Kay. You can read her essays at kaysreportcard.com. K-A-Y-S, Kay's Report Card. And this from Andy in Seattle. His subject line, what the hell is going on? He writes, first of all, and I have to put the word blank in here a couple of times. Andy is, first of all, why are Europeans so quick to start to riot anytime their governments do anything that threatens social programs? While here in the land of the free, we just sit around and take it blank, 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 blank without saying a word. Seriously, what in the blank is wrong with Americans? Are we that brainwashed by our corporate forms of entertainment that we forgot how to be human? Are we all just cowardly and yellow? Second of all, can we all agree any discussion about cuts or reforms to Social Security or Medicare must be discussed only with vast cuts to our military budget? Every month they want to raise the retirement age. Every month that they want to raise the retirement age, the military budget must be cut by 10%. So they raise the retirement age 6 months, the military budget must be cut by 60%. Same idea with Medicare. They want to cut Medicare 5%, then the military budget must be cut by 50%. Cut Medicare by 6%, then it's cut by 60%, the military budget. Every time I hear the experts talk about cutting the budget, it's always Social Security or Medicare. And if they happen to talk about the military, it's only to cut some dated project from Reagan's first military budget that cost $10 million. Is it just me, or is the military budget the first and most pressing budgetary item that will kill us off faster than anything else? Am I wrong? Or should we just tell anyone who plans on living to retirement age, which will probably soon be 85 years of age, to stock up on canned pet food? Andy in Seattle. No, not canned pet food. Prairie 2's been telling us for a couple of years, canned food. It doesn't have to be pet food. As a matter of fact, have you seen the price of pet food lately? John is in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hello, John.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm okay.
Yeah, we had an election recently.
Yes, we did.
I ran against Blanche Lincoln.
Oh, did you really?
And as a result of the interview I did with your show, Blanche and John Bozeman were, for some reason, made a mistake and allowed the minor candidates to participate in a debate on public television here in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
But as a result of the interview I did with you, I got money in from all over the United States. And the money that I got from Arkansas came as a result of the interview with you.
Hmm.
And it was kind of interesting. It's like there was an almost total news blackout on anything that we were doing,
mm-hmm.
other than outside of the state information like your show and YouTube videos that were that kind of went viral all over California and Florida and places like that.
Right, right.
But it was interesting. We wound up with about 3.5% of the vote, which is about what I expected.
Mm.
But the interesting part is, in that debate, which I think your show forced them into allowing, there is a very respected journalist here in Arkansas that said that Blanche and John Bozeman were obviously unprepared, and they got destroyed mm-hmm. in that debate.
Was that journalist Gene?
John Brumman.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that name. I'm drawing a blank on the guy. I'm trying to remember his last name. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, in any case, it was on PBS and not widely seen across the state, but I think it resulted in most of the votes that we did get.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I had discussed for almost an hour why it is Arkansas is on the bottom of almost any list you might want to name, and why the people of Arkansas vote against their own interests so much.
Right, right.
Well, this bully pulpit and just the involvement in this campaign, I met wonderful people, had a great time, and it was totally worthwhile. But I learned so much about why things are the way they are in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one newspaper that covers the state. The newspaper and the three major TV channels that have the local news around the state
mm-hmm.
are pretty much owned by the same people, and they shape the news very carefully to produce the end result they're looking for.
Right.
And then they do these polls periodically to confirm that the propaganda they're putting out is achieving the end result they're looking for. So that ultimately, it's my opinion, the people of Arkansas have no clue what they want or what's good for them. They only know what the television tells them to think.
Isn't that happening on a national level too, John, to the point, it's been going on for 20 years now, to the point where Americans cannot make an informed decision anymore, a politically informed decision, because of the lies and distortions that have become received wisdom.
Precisely. And so I came out of this experience feeling that until there is a mechanism for teaching the people of Arkansas what is in their interest and what reality is and what truth is, any third-party effort or any money spent like that is a total waste of time and energy, because it is going to get nowhere. It's over.
I agree, and I think the one element that will teach the lesson, not just people of Arkansas, people of Georgia, too. I mean, here where I live, it's just, it's astonishing. One of the most corrupt members of Congress was just elected governor here. He resigned from Congress to avoid an investigation. Now he's Georgia's governor. But I think what it's going to take in Arkansas and Georgia across the country is pain. People are not willing to use their heads except as a hat rack, it seems, and not even that anymore. And it's going to take excruciating pain. I mean, the kind of pain that comes from people of a certain age watching their children, their grandchildren going without health insurance because their children can't find a job. I'm talking about the right wingers, the Republicans and conservative Democrats. It's going to take pain to a degree that it will make the depression, the Great Depression in the 30s, look like a Sunday in the park with George. I don't know what else it's going to take, John, to wake people up to stop voting against their own best interests because the candidate happens to have a position that corresponds with what they're taught in Sunday school.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, at this point, you know, I've had people encouraging me to, you know, hang in there and look toward the next election and that sort of thing. And I'm an engineer. I look at the numbers, the data, mm-hmm. and I say, until there is an alternate media in the state, which there isn't going to be, mm-hmm. until there is no possibility. It is a waste of energy.
Hello.
And yeah. So anyhow, a learning experience. It's making me turn my eyes toward Mexico and the mountains, where you can go and just be lost in some small town in the middle of nowhere, which is looking more attractive to me all the time.
I hear you, John. Listen, thanks for checking in, all right?
All right.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. I appreciate hearing from you. Take care.
First a war on terror, now war on Iraq. We're reaching a point where we can't turn back.
Cause I won't carry guns for an oil war. A salam, ooh, a lick of salam. Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam.
Now don't get us wrong, cause we love America, but that's no reason to get hysterical. L.A. and Northern Zero, if we ain't waffles, we ain't having it.
In a world going on, it's hard to think right. So much violence in this way. We're going on.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Dot in Seattle writes, Mike, just heard about the layoffs coming to the Northrop Grumman shipyards. Jesus, how many more Americans are going to lose their jobs? I've been unemployed since April of this year and have no clue when I'll find another job. Hearing that more people are going to be kicked into the gutter just makes me want to weep. These are sad times, and since the Nazi teabagger Republicans have taken over the House, I have no doubt that the light at the end of the tunnel is really a locomotive coming at us at full speed. Dot in Seattle. Before that, maybe there has to be the pain that I was talking to John about, John, Arkansas. Maybe that pain has to come first. It has to be so deep and so seemingly abiding that the sane Americans, and there are millions of us, will put a stop to this. And if it means squashing a few cockroaches in order to put a stop to it, then the cockroaches are going to be squashed. I don't think that sane, normal, working class, middle class, working poor people in this country are going to just absolutely throw their hands up in the air. I realize how the vote went, but that's because what percentage of the people went out and voted in these midterm elections? Was it 34%? 42%? What was it? So, and the winners were declared with what? 60% of 40%? What is that? 24%? In some of these races? So, eventually, I think the majority of Americans who are frustrated right now, they're extremely anxious. We all are. I shouldn't say they. I should say we. We're extremely frustrated, extremely anxious, and very concerned about what's coming next. I mean, day to day, it just seems to roll over us like I don't know, some kind of zombie-driven vehicle. But at some point, we are going to start squashing cockroaches in this society. We are. And as filthy and sickening as cockroaches are, when they're skittering around, and trust me, I've lived in the South for 40 years, so I know what I'm talking about. When they're skittering around, they're difficult to smash, but once you smash one, they get dead very quickly. And we have a bunch of cockroaches that have eaten their way into our political system. And we're going to have to squash them. We're going to have to adopt the Tom DeLay attitude. You remember Tom DeLay, the bug man? You remember him? Who drove himself insane from breathing parathion and all that crap that he used to exterminate roaches and silverfish and ants and bees and rats down in Texas. You remember Tom DeLay, right? Who is now totally mad. He's absolutely lost his mind. He's soon going to go to prison, too. His trial has begun. And once he gets in prison, of course, people like Tom DeLay, they put in special prisons. If they put him in a general population, he would experience an awful lot of terror. And rightly so. But it soon will be cockroach squashing time in this country, because the vast majority of us are not going to allow the cockroaches to continue with this destruction. Eventually, we're going to realize what they have done and what they are doing. I mean, really realize it. Really take a look. And it's going to come as a result of the pain that the cockroaches are going to cause. Cockroaches always cause pain, right? When you see them skittering around, you flip on the lights at 3 a.m. when you get up to get a drink of water, and you see these things, blah, 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 run back behind the woodwork. What, that's never happened to you? You don't live in the South, right? Or New York City. Of course, New York City has their own form of cockroaches. They're bedbugs, right? But when the bedbugs and the cockroaches finally get to the point where they have caused America so much excruciating pain, we will smash them. Because we are not going to allow ourselves to be eaten or defeated or destroyed by cockroaches. We're not going to do it. We absolutely are not going to do it. So when I feel that anxiety and that rage and that fear that has really bounced around inside of me for the past 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, for the past decade, you know, watching as this country is just torn to pieces by the cockroaches, and some of these cockroaches actually talk. Talking cockroaches are the ones that you really have to smash. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not real. Who ever heard of a talking cockroach? So if you're listening to a cockroach talk, you know you've got some kind of a freak of nature, and you get the bug bomb out and you spray the talking cockroach right in the throat. You know what I'm saying? Sure you do. Some people will call that a Second Amendment solution. I call it just exterminating the bugs, the cockroaches, the filth. So that's got to happen. And it will happen. It's just that because we have become so anesthetized. Oh, that was loud. Because we've become so anesthetized, we have to come out of the ether. And it's going to take pain to do it, but eventually we will. All right, we have a break. Next hour, I was thinking today, well, stick around. I'm going to talk about this next hour. Obama has been the perfect capitalist, and how have the cockroaches responded to that? Stick around. We're going to cover that coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. I think one of the things that is more irritating to me about the teabaggers and the right-wing nut media in this country is the fact that the right-wing nut media will not engage in anything truthful. There is no truth whatsoever on any of these right-wing talk shows, whether it is the suicider Glenn Beck or the drug addict Limbaugh or the self-abuser Savage or the Bunny Ranch bedhopper Sean Hannity. It doesn't make any difference who any of these people are. They refuse to tell the truth because they know that once they touch the truth, it'll burn their goddamn hand off right up to the elbow or any other part of their anatomy that touches the truth. So their system of exchange with their listeners is pure falsehood, pure lies, absolutely top to bottom. For example, you think about the president that we have, Barack Obama, who has done everything he possibly could to ensure the survival of a dying economic system, capitalism. He is a Chicago School of Economics capitalist, and he's done everything he could. After Bush and Cheney did everything they could to destroy it. And in the process, let the real capitalists just reach in with both fists to grab everything they could grab. Cheney made sure that the warmongers, who the capitalist warmongers who run the military-industrial complex, could steal our soldiers, the Marines, blind, causing them to die, causing them to have equipment that didn't work, armor that was too thin, bullets that wouldn't, or guns that wouldn't fire, bullets that wouldn't explode, you know, the whole thing. And it doesn't make any difference if you're pro-war, anti-war, in regards to what I'm talking about. Once the troops are committed, to think that the capitalists provided them with no means to protect themselves as they went about the business of the capitalists, which would be to steal the country's assets. I mean, the whole thing is just maddening. If you try to follow this too closely, the way things work, you wind up feeling like Alice going down the rabbit hole. You know, this pill makes you big, this pill makes you small. The Red Queen determines what is what. You know, announce the verdict first and then have the trial. On and on and on. But Obama, one simple fact remains. Obama is a capitalist of the highest order. I think he has been since he became politically aware. I guess he would be capitalism with a heart, if such a thing exists. You know, people point to his neighborhood organizing back in Chicago. That organizing was not based on a socialist or communist model. It was based strictly on a model that said eventually capitalism will help you. You know, entrepreneurship, pull yourself up by your non-existent bootstraps. Make sure that government responds in a way that frees people up to do whatever they want within a capitalist system. The teabag asses and the right-wingers, the mainstream right-wing politicians in this country don't dare tell the truth. They don't dare. The TARP funds that went to corporate America, capitalist America, those came at the end of the Bush-Cheney crime spree. That wasn't Obama. Obama didn't send money to Washington, or I mean to New York, or to wherever these capitalist pigs were squatting, eating the corpse of America that they had created. That was Bush and Cheney that did that. They sent the TARP funds. Obama tried injecting additional money into a dying system. He saved the domestic auto industry. and the hundreds of thousands of jobs that would have disappeared. And what is going on now? Is it General Motors that's about to have a initial stock offering, the new restructured General Motors? Most of what Obama did is returning a profit to the government, for God's sake. The teabaggers, the right-wingers, don't dare tell the truth. Obama responded time and again in his first 2 years to the demands of his capitalist backers. By the way, which company was the biggest contributor to Obama's campaign in 2008? Goldman Sachs. Yeah, he's a real socialist, real communist. But this dumbass Glenn Beck and this idiotic little parrot Sean Hannity and these psychos like Sarah Palin who run around the country delivering cookies to schools that are desperately trying to tackle childhood diabetes. Have you heard the latest about that, bitch? Yes, bitch. Obama even included his escalation of the unwinnable and illegal wars in both Afghanistan and Pakistan because of the demands of the military-industrial monster that makes so many of the decisions regarding U.S. foreign policy. Communist? Socialist? And these filthy, putrid, Daryl Issa-type right-wingers. Oh, he's a communist. He's a socialist. He was born in Kenya. And how was Obama rewarded? For all the orders he followed from his capitalist backers, from all the initiatives he took to salvage an ultimately unsalvageable system, global capitalism, it is dying. I mean, what kind, how much brain power or capacity does one person have to understand that capitalism is dying and it's taking everything down with it? I'm not saying that it's still not producing billionaires. Of course it is. It's predatory, just like vultures and carrion eaters will feast long after every form of life on this planet, human life, animal life, dies, because there'll be all these corpses that they can continue to eat. That's what the capitalists are doing to our system, our global economic system. How is he rewarded? How is Obama rewarded? He was rewarded by the capitalists allowing the teabag freaks and the right-wing morons to dominate the national political hysteria. And as a result, caused the loss of hundreds of legislative seats across the country. Not just on a national level, but like I mentioned last night, on a state level. Hundreds of seats, 690 seats, switched from Democrat to Republican. That's how Obama was rewarded. And why did the right wing, the Koch brothers and these other sons of bitches, why did they do this? They did it because they know that the right wing nuts can be easily manipulated as long as they have a piece of human waste like Glenn Beck or a monstrous drug addicted freak like Rush Limbaugh. The right wing nuts who sit out there, squat out there like morons in Radioland can be so very easily manipulated. More so, they know that the capitalists know that it is easier to control the Becks and the Limbaughs more so than an educated leader like Obama. So while they used him, you see, when they got what they wanted, the capitalists dropped him. And made sure, to the best that they could, that he too will be a one-term president. We'll be right back.
America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So the right wing in this country rewards this young, energetic capitalist, Barack Obama, by cutting his throat politically, just cutting his throat. After he did everything he possibly could to ensure that capitalism would survive to loot and pillage another day, not just here, but globally, as capitalism has been doing for the past couple of hundred years. But one would think, at least I would think, that the capitalists would reward him. I mean, here's the perfect guy, right? If they handled it correctly, properly, the capitalists could have claimed their great ability to see beyond race and elect a man who was going to do such a good job for the United States, when in fact, that's not what capitalism is about at all. It's not about doing a good job for anybody except for themselves. So he did everything that he was advised to do. I'm not saying that there were strings attached to Obama's mouth the way they were to Bush's mouth. But the education of Barack Obama was an education steeped in capitalist principles, neoliberal principles. And neoliberalism has nothing to do with political liberalism, so look it up if you wonder what the hell the term means, neoliberalism. He does everything that he is instructed to do, that his education taught him to do, that his mindset says is the proper thing to do, and who benefits? The American worker is not benefiting. The American homeowner is not benefiting. The American working class or the American middle class is not benefiting. Who's benefiting? Who's benefiting? The military security state is what's benefiting. The wars go on and are escalated. As far as a drawdown in Iraq, that doesn't mean a thing. We had so many soldiers sitting there who were doing nothing. Now we're down to 50,000. That war is about to take off again anyway. Afghanistan, an increase in troops, penetrating into Pakistan, plans to invade or at least support an invasion of Iran. I mean, just on and on. Obama is doing what the security state is demanding that he do. Guantanamo, still there. Surveillance of American citizens, increasing. And yet these ignorant sons of bitches who comprise the teabaggers or the right-wingers or the Republicans or the swine and scum who dominate right-wing talk, or talk radio and talk television insist that this man is a socialist. And, of course, the power behind all of this allows human waste like Beck to continue to pump these lies out because they know. They know that an uninformed or misinformed electorate is easier to manipulate. This goes back to the Joseph Goebbels playbook. They know this. I mean, Jesus Christ. The last thing capitalism wants is a country awash in truth. What possible benefit would they get from truth when capitalism is the foundation of it is a lie, a series of lies? So the problem in the United States right now, it's not high taxes. We are taxed at a lower rate right now than we have been either in the history of this country or in the past 150 years. But that truth will never out because it does not benefit capitalist America to tell the truth under any circumstances. What the problem is in this country is ineffective or non-existent regulation in place to slow, not stop, because it's unstoppable, to slow the worst abuses of capitalism. And as a result, whenever money is available in the form of tax revenue or massive borrowing. It goes directly into the pockets of the capitalists who repeatedly corrupt the system. Jesus Christ, will Americans ever wake up to this? The cyclical pillage and looting of the national treasury to the point where we are now trillions upon trillions of dollars in debt. Is that because we have people on welfare? Give me a goddamn break. Is that because we spend too much on health programs for children? Are you out of your mind? It is because capitalism is eating itself as well as the rest of this of the country. So the teabag lying bastards and the right-wing lying bastards continue their assault. The right-wing media in this country, the liars, they refuse an honest discussion because they know that the truth will destroy them. I've got a real good example of that coming back that occurred right here in Georgia last election day. Stay with us.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Before the hour. So an example of how the filthy lies perpetrated by the right-wing scum in this country affect on a specific level. I've got a situation for you from right here in Georgia. And again, the refusal or the inability, actually, of anybody on the right to engage in truth on any level is the problem that we're facing here. In order to make informed decisions, you've got to have factual information. If the truth were told, and then somebody wants to be a right-winger, be one. Somebody wants to be a left-winger, be one. Somebody wants to be a social democrat, go for it. Somebody wants to be an unbridled capitalist, do it. But if all the facts were laid out as they really, really exist, you know, somebody said everybody's entitled to opinion, but nobody's to their own opinion, but nobody's entitled to their own truth. There is no such thing. If all the facts were laid out clearly, succinctly, there is no question that people would pick a system that resembled social democracy or democratic socialism. To do otherwise would be insanity, but that's what we're doing. And look at the result. I mean, look at the result. Do you think that we are where we are because of Barack Obama? Oh, for Christ's sake. You're not that stupid. Well, some of you are. You teabaggers, you right-wingers, of course you're that stupid. It's the Kenyan in the White House who brought down the wrath of Allah onto America, right? Jesus, you people make me sick. Here's an example of what happens on a local level. I mentioned this earlier in the week. On election day, there was an item on the ballot here in Georgia. It was Prop 2, Amendment 2. And what it was to do was to increase, I mentioned here in Georgia, when we buy our license plates every year, there's an ad valorem tax that determines the cost of your plates, and it's based on the value of your car. You pay this tax for as long as you have your car. If you have your car 15 or 18 years where it no longer has a market value, then your license plates drop down to the fee for the plate, which is maybe $5. But most people in the state pay $100 or a couple hundred dollars every year for license plate renewal. Amendment 2 on last week's ballot would have assessed a $10 annual fee on vehicle registration, with all the revenue dedicated to a statewide trauma care system that was expected to save about 700 lives a year. Other than Atlanta and a few medium-sized cities, I wouldn't even call them cities, big towns, Georgia is a rural state. It's the largest state east of the Mississippi, and it is largely rural. As a result, I'm picking a number out of the air here, but I think I have read that 60-70% of the population of the state of Georgia lives more than an hour away from a medical trauma center. These trauma centers are especially effective for people who are in car wrecks or accidents, falling into a thresher machine, whatever. And most medical people will tell you in catastrophic disasters like that, where the human body is mangled, you have an hour, the golden hour. Heart attacks, strokes, all of it. You got about an hour before the damage is irreversible or you die. So for a $10 fee, Georgians had a chance to tax themselves on their license plate fee, their vehicle registration fee, 10 bucks a year. And the estimates were that this would save about 700 lives a year, probably 98% of whom were Christian, because it is Georgia. And the voters said, no, ain't gonna do it. Why? Why? Well, Jay Bookman, who is a columnist, and I like Jay Bookman a lot. He's a liberal columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He wrote about this. He said the themes of distrust in state government and anger at excess taxation ran deep in email after email that the AJC received at their website because Bookman wrote a column after this was defeated talking about the madness of defeating something like this, a $10 a year license registration fee to save hundreds of lives with trauma centers. And he says he got email after email that contained themes of distrust in state government and anger at excess taxation. He goes on to say readers voted against Amendment 2, they explained, because Georgians already pay higher and higher taxes to an inefficient state government that would probably just waste the money anyway. Why give them more money when they're taking too much already? Right? That's how people responded here in Georgia to Bookman's column. He goes on, there's no reason to doubt the sincerity of that perception that we have inefficient state government. Georgians are already paying higher and higher taxes. There's no reason to doubt the sincerity of that perception. After all, Bookman writes, voters are merely repeating a narrative that has been preached to them for years, ironically, by the very people that they entrust to run state government, Republicans. I mean, Jesus, God, we have a Republican state. And yet people say, well, inefficient state government. Who put them there? The Georgia voters. But that's just an example of the psychosis that runs so deep in this state and other states that are run by right wingers. Bookman goes on. By now, the voters in Georgia have come to believe this narrative at a gut level, where it can't be challenged without provoking an angry gut level reaction. But the narrative isn't true. According to the Conservative Tax Foundation, Georgia ranks 43rd in state spending per capita, behind such obvious states as New York, which ranks 5th, Massachusetts, which ranks 8th, but also below Alabama, which rates 32nd, South Carolina, 21st. So Georgia ranks 43rd in state spending per capita. So the argument, the narrative that state government just wastes money, we waste or not waste, we don't even spend it here. We are 43rd in state spending per capita. And we only have 8 million people in this entire state. Okay? And according to the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute, state government also takes significantly less of Georgia's per capita income. Taxes. 4.7% than it took 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was 6.3%. Now it's 4.7. Now, this lie is perpetrated on a national scale, too. But here in Georgia, let me just stay with Georgia. In national surveys, such as those by Governing Magazine, Georgia always ranks high in state government efficiency. One of the reasons for that is we don't have any money. So it has to be efficient. There's no money to waste. Bookman writes, I understand that many will refuse to believe such data. When facts contradict cherished perceptions, perceptions almost always will carry the day. In fact, this particular perception of inefficiency here in Georgia state government, of high tax rates, of wasted money, that particular perception not only thrives, but has now begun to feed upon itself. Now, Bookman's column goes on, but the points that are important to me are those that I just took from his column. And if you extrapolate on a national level what Bookman has written about what goes on here, this crazy perception, Americans in general are paying less in taxes now than anybody alive has ever paid. Who is a taxpayer? We are paying less now, all of us. I don't care if you're working, if you are paying taxes, you are paying less now than you ever paid in your life, or your mom and daddy's life, or your grandmammy's life, or auntie's life. But that's not the perception. So the lies can perpetuate by these right-wing scum, like this filthy Glenn Beck, this America-hating Limbaugh, this piglet Sean Hannity. They just continue and continue and continue to pump the lies out into this gray matter between the ears of people who wouldn't know the truth if it came up and bit them on the ass. And the right-wingers will never, now that they control media, ever allow the truth to be spoken. It's about 9 minutes before the hour. Trying to find truth in the national narrative on any given day is damn near impossible. You know it as well as I do. Talk radio is hopelessly lost. So much of talk television is either anti-truth or makes such an ass-backward attempt to present both sides to any given argument that it might as well be anti-truth. And what does that leave? I mean, where do I go, where do you go to hear anything that remotely resembles the truth? Well, you can go to Rachel Maddow's program, and for the most part, Keith Olbermann's program, and for the most part, Lawrence O'Donnell's program. You see the little cluster there? But where else are you going to go? There are still some writers who write the truth, but you know you should know the odds of Maddow or Olbermann or O'Donnell reaching the masses. The same as an ice cube's chance of existing in hell. Now, we have, of course, at anyone who wants it, at our individual disposal, is the largest truth machine ever devised by a mind of man, and that, of course, is the maligned Internet. Yeah, there's a lot of garbage out there, but there's also a lot of truth. And if you're like me, you still have at your disposal a set of encyclopedias. Remember those? Actual books. You remember that? I bought a set of encyclopedias for my now 32-year-old son way back in the early 80s. Mid-80s. And interestingly, the other night, right before Molly went in to have her stories read to her, we were watching one of the PBS cartoon shows or something. And the narrator, the voiceover, was describing an encyclopedia, how you could look things up in an encyclopedia. And Molly had kind of a blank look on her face, at least that's how I read it, because she has seen me use the Internet to look things up. And yet here in the basement studio, we have a wall that's dedicated to books, and in that on that shelving are all these encyclopedias. So right away, she wanted to know, do we have those books? I thought, oh, my God. So I brought her downstairs, even though Kathy said, it's bedtime! I brought her downstairs and showed her encyclopedias. So there's plenty of source material available for people who want to know the truth. The political truth is available all over the place. But it's like the... what was that? I guess it was a Conan Doyle story, Kathy, about the clue that was right in front of everybody's face, and nobody saw it. The Scarlet Letter? Well, no, not the Scarlet Letter. That was about a whore. Yeah, that was Nathaniel Hawthorne. What was the one about the clue? No, not the Maltese Falcon. It doesn't make any difference. But the information, the clue to unlocking this torrent, this cascade of lies that sweeps across this country, as the pig man would say, across the fruited plain, border to border and coast to coast, here, try an OxyContin. The antidote for those lies and distortions is available. The reason I got off on this or got into this was because of that call I got the other night where the guy said, well, where can I find a history of the United States that contains these truths that you're talking about? And that just dumbfounded me. Like, where can you find it? Turn off mainstream media for a week and start doing your own investigations and you'll find it. Oh, jeez. The truth will never be discussed by right-wingers, ever, or by capitalists, ever. Truth to a capitalist top of the food chain, the truth is malleable, it is conditional, and in fact, it is what they say it is. It's just like Winston Smith working at the Ministry of Truth. It is what the ruling class says it is, period. And in this case, the ruling class in this country is predatory capitalism. So how do you get the truth? How do you find out that you're not being overtaxed? How do you find out that the real destruction in this society is not coming from Barack Obama or the Democratic Party, or for that matter, even the Republican Party? It is coming from the capitalists who are ending this country. How do you arrive at that? Or do you even care? I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.